My name's Adele Onyango, and welcome to another episode of Legally Clueless. No, seriously, I have no clue what I'm doing, but I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one. Hey you, welcome to this episode of Legally Clueless. This is what's coming up.
And we were being taught that, you know, education is a big deal. Basically, if you pass in school, you'll pass in life. That's what we were taught. If you are number one to number three, you are doing well in school, you'll be a good parent in future, you'll be a millionaire in future. That's what we are being sold. That's the only thing we are sold in school. So that's what I grew up believing. When I was being explained to that I'm 28 out of 29, I remember it was my older sister. She was trying to explain to me. And she explained it like three times. And I was like, that doesn't make sense. That sounds like a bad thing there that you're telling me. But the way it was explained is like, it's a moral thing, like being number last. It's a matter of morals. Like, with it comes like a lot of like immorality almost, being number last in school. To the point that sometimes even in class, like you'd be beaten. We were being punished for not knowing.
That is part one of Tanya's story. It's actually one of those food for thought stories. I have been thinking about it ever since our correspondent sent it in, and I'm like, oh my goodness, there's this one big lie that all of us were sold, and now we're dismantling it. But we're going to get to her story in a bit. Welcome, welcome to the fam. If this is your first time here, this is an awesome family. Audio episodes of this episode go out every single Monday. On Wednesdays, we have the Midweek Tease, where I unpack different topics that I think can help you as a woman on your healing journey. And our newsletter also goes out on Wednesdays. You can sign up for that on our website. A link is in the show notes. On Thursdays, we have For Manless Women, our youngest show that is doing incredibly well. And it's self-explanatory. If you are a manless woman, which means you are defining womanhood for yourself, or you are trying to be manless, this is a show for you. And currently, we have just wrapped a season that has taken us through Nigeria, South Africa, Zimbabwe, Somalia, and Ghana. Guys, the awakening on the continent for women is so real. And I'm so happy that I'm alive and that this space exists for us to go through it together. Speaking of For Manless Women, I have one very important announcement. This is your last call to join the waitlist for Manless Women Live. So for months, my team and I have been quietly working on creating something we've never done before, which is a live experience where women from our community can come together, hear powerful conversations, connect with each other, leave feeling a lot more manless and a lot less alone. Does that make sense? And so this is going to be the first ever For Manless Women Live. It's happening on the 26th of September. And if you've been thinking, I'll join the waitlist later, this is your sign, because we are going to close the waitlist this week. Already, over 200 women have joined the waitlist. And I'm sending love to each and every one of you who have and have sent your ideas on how For Manless Women Live can be meaningful for you. So everybody who's on the waitlist will get first access to the early bird tickets, as well as helping us create how this experience can just be as manless as possible for you. I'm so excited for it. Let me tell you, on a personal level, obviously as a founder of this space, there is anxiety that comes with doing something big, but I can't explain to you how aligned I feel with the work that I'm doing now. It is exactly the work that I was created to do, which is holding the hands of women, primarily African women, as we navigate coming home to ourselves, remembering who we are, and breaking free of the prison that societal expectations put us in, and allowing ourselves to design womanhood for ourselves on an individual level, right? So like, my version of womanhood doesn't have to look like yours. I just need the space to feel confident and empowered enough to do that. So like, as we're planning the life, I'm just feeling energized. I'm feeling so energized. I'm not even feeling anxious. I'm feeling like, oh, yes, let's do this. Anyway, you will find the link to join the waitlist in the show notes. Let's get back to this episode. Today's story is one I think that many of us are going to see ourselves in, right? And from a very young age, we were taught one equation, which is study hard, get good grades, and then everything else in life will fall into place. But that equation doesn't really work, hey? Because what happens when you do everything right and then life doesn't unfold the way you were promised? This is part one of Tanya Nyambura's story.
100 African stories on Legally Clueless. Stories from Africa.
My name is Tanya Nyambura. I'm from a very big family. I don't know if I should say I'm half Kikuyu, half Luya. Yeah, very interesting combination. That's me. I do so many things. I don't even know how to say my occupation. I just say like I do many things. And I kind of leave it at that because I've pursued so many different careers as I've gone along. I grew up in Kitale and in Nairobi. So when I was like 1 to maybe 5, I was in Kitale. I schooled in Kitale a little bit before moving to Nairobi, where then I continued my school. What I remember most is when I was schooling in Kitale, it was very chill. So my mom would actually come at lunchtime to school so that she could pick me at lunchtime, we go eat lunch, then bring me back to school. But she never used to bring me back to school. She'd just take us back home and we'd leave my school bag in school and my homework in school, which was very funny. And so it was very, like, relaxed. You could reach school at, like, 10. It was just chill, farm life. Of course, before I came to now Nairobi, where I had a really hard time in school because, like, them, they were doing SST. In Kitale, we were just doing Kiswahili, English and maths. Three subjects. Yes, in, like, class one there. But like when we came to Nairobi, like the school was so advanced, they were doing CRE. And I was like, what are these things? Man, we do 3 subjects, the day is done, you go home. After all, like, we're babies. Like, why are you teaching us CRE? We're in class one. What do you need to know CRE, SST? But they were doing that, so I had a really hard time. I think I was number last for like the first 10 years of my life. I was always number last. Like number 28 out of 29 or 29 out of 29. For my parents, are like, Manzi, you've taken off this number last. Yeah, so that's what I remember. What I wanted to do, I didn't have really an idea of a career. I just kind of was wondering why this school. I was still trying to navigate moving from Kitale to Nairobi. So I was not thinking I want to be anything really. Just how can I actually like excel in school? Because that was always a big thing, like, you're number last. This is serious. When I say the first 10 years of my life, I was always number last. That's actually from Kitale. My mom never revealed to me that I was number last in Kitale. So when they used to do prize giving day, I used to go to the stage to get a prize and they'd still be like, what's wrong with this kid? Kid is just coming for presents and they're not even ranking. But when I went to Nairobi, because I'm from a big family, we'd have like our report cards together. And for the longest time, I thought the bigger the number, the better, like money. If you have 2 shillings, well, you've done bad. But like I thought like 28 months, hey, the bigger the better. Until my sibling tried to explain to me like this means actually, yeah, the last down here, like 1, 2, 3, down. And it started dawning on me because now we are many and we are sharing and we take like our report cards to our dad to sign. And of course, he'd be like, "Hey, like, where, you're number last." And so the first 10 years of my life, so maybe until I was 10 years old there, then I started becoming that midsection, the 20s. I was still ranking in the 20s because our class would be maybe 30 students, so I'm still in the 20s, but I worked very, very hard. When I realized that I was number last, and it was a big deal in our house, like education was a big deal, so the better you are doing, like it's just good for you, like people think of you better, like, you know. So I worked when I realized finally that was number last, I worked very hard. I think I stopped being, I became, by the time I was getting to class 8, I think I was now number 4. And I really struggled. I would read every, hey, people would, you know, those people who didn't read in primary and were just passing, they are lucky. So I really read, I think when I was in class 8, I started being like number 4, top 10. And I would like get 400 marks. 400 marks. That was really a good time for me. And then when I switched to high school, I would now rank top 3. I'll just be top 3. I think high school was easier because you kind of explain like what you're saying than ABCD in, you know, primary school. So yeah, then I'd just be like top 3. I just knew like education was a big deal, and we were being taught that, you know, education is a big deal. Basically, if you pass in school, you'll pass in life. That's what we were taught. If you are number 1 to number 3, you are doing well in school, you'll be a good parent in future, you'll be a millionaire in future. Like, everything is, if you do anything, just pass. That's what we are being sold. That's the only thing we are sold in school. Excel in school, good parent in future, good in everything, good relationships in future, good finances. But if you fail, you'll be a bad parent because, you know, you'll be number last. And now you can't convince your kids to be number 1 because you are number last. That's what I grew up believing. Until, of course, the future. When I was being explained to that I'm 28 out of 29, I remember it was my older sister. She was trying to explain to me. And she explained it like 3 times. And I was like, that doesn't make sense. That sounds like a bad thing there that you're telling me. That sounds like a bad thing. And according to me, I'm not doing any moral sin. You know, I go to school, I do homework, whether it's good or bad, I get 0 or not 0. But the way it was explained is like, it's a moral thing, like being number last. It's a matter of morals. Like, it's not a, you're not, it means you're not intelligent, it means you're not trying, it means you're lazy. With it comes like a lot of like immorality almost, being number last in school. To the point that sometimes even in class, like you'd be beaten. We were being punished for not knowing, ignorance. I guess ignorance, we're being beaten, the ignorance is coming out of the body. So we'd be beaten for failing. You're not beaten for lying. You're not beating for, I was not understanding that mathematics, because even in the home space, your morality is your grades. So you can be passing, they can be rude, they can be mean, even siblings. But if they're doing well, then they are correct. They're like righteous or something of the sort. But if you're number last, it's like you're in the pits of moral decay. Like, this is a decayed child. But you haven't done anything, quote unquote, that is immoral or wrong. So you just kind of wonder, like, wait, this is very strange. So you want to get out of the number last because of the stigma that is attached to being number last. Your siblings are kind of like, manzi, what's going on with you? And I think even in the home front, it's difficult. It's difficult. I suppose you're loved, but with a bit of an edge, like, you're loved, but what's not happening with you? Why are you not functioning the way you should be functioning, which is being number last? And I don't know, you know, we can't all be number one, unfortunately, or fortunately. I don't know which camp, you know. So yeah, it was hard for me. It felt bad, of course. It felt like I was doing something wrong, and I had to correct that wrong quickly. Quickly, because I guess you're loved based on your number one or number last. So you attach, you know, your parents' love to whether you're doing well in school. Friends, people will laugh at you because when they read out the numbers, people laugh at you. Nobody wants to associate with the number last. Number last kind of looks like that kid with makamasi coming out of them. They're sickly, they can't grasp, they didn't attend lessons because they're number last. Kind of has that image. So you needed to get out of it quickly. Or at least if you're number last, like once in a blue moon. Yeah. So in high school, yes, I started to thrive academically. I went to high schools. I went to State House Girls. It was crazy. I didn't survive even 1 year. It was a boarding school. Like, I didn't have the requisite skills to survive. It was boarding. It was all girls. They didn't have what I'd say the best food. And now I'm coming from group of schools too. Group of schools to State House. I'm just like, this is not my thing. This is not my thing. We're so many in a class. We're like, I think 80 students, and I'm used to like 30 students. You're sitting with your desk mate, like they're literally beside you, like you can elbow them by mistake. And the other place, like you had room, you know, someone could walk around your desk. But it was just really hard. But somehow, like, I found things easy because you just needed to understand and then write what you've understood on the assessment. So you weren't locked into this ABCD where you check multiple choices. So, because multiple choices can be tricky. Yeah, like it could be A/B or a bit of A and a bit of B, you know. But now that you have the chance to explain, you can explain why it's A and also a little bit of B and put some philosophy and reasoning into your questions. I mean, into your answers. So, yeah, that was high school for me. So, it was difficult for me to survive on the social side because of the washing clothes. I'd put my clothes in a bucket, put Omo, and then stamp inside. Like, and put just look at me like wildlife. Like, why are you doing that? I'm like, this sweater, how do you wash sweater with hands? Somebody how? So you put it in the unai sock, and then you just kind of jump in the bucket and, you know, like you're crushing or making wine, something like that. Before State House Girls, laundry was somebody used to wash for us our clothes. So yeah, the only big deal we used to have was because we were many, like we'd fight over school uniform, like the one that's cute, you know. Yeah, with your sister, like that cute, you know, uniform is mine, and they're like, no, this is mine. Or include school, you're like, is that my school dress? You know, but people, those people who used to do our laundry. So it was very new. I mean, very new, but not fun. Not fun at all. Not fun at all. Of course, now there are people who you've never... We didn't have that. Like, I personally didn't have that social skill of even being able to talk to people from different parts of Kenya, because now there are people who are coming with accents and you're like, what's that? What's that? I remember one of my classmates was a Mokorino, and I would stare at her head like the whole lesson, because as we only knew, like, you know, the Muslims, and I had not seen the Mokorino one. So I just stare at her head in class like, what? Like, why is she like that? So it was like a new world, which was nice, but also very difficult, because those are some of the skills that you just didn't get in primary school, how to relate with people from other spheres, other circles. You didn't even know they existed. So, yeah, that was very interesting, but very difficult. Academically, it was pretty easy. Like, the teacher explains when you write your notes and kind of go. I didn't understand why we need to do preps in the morning, preps in the evening, preps. Like, preps was, every time we're doing preps, I didn't get that. And the waking up early. Of course, the cold water didn't make sense, because you are usually taught if you stand in the rain, you will get sick. So tell me why we're bathing with cold water at 6 a.m. Why are we not? Aren't we going to get sick? Like, explain it to me, somebody. So those places were a bit hard, the food and just that other socials, but not the academic bit. It was kind of now easier at that point in time. The transition was basically, I honestly couldn't survive. I remember there was an instance of bullying. I think a girl had stolen my socks or something like that, and she had pulled them up, and you could see the form one mono labeling, the one with the kapasi, written my name, my admission number. So I went up to her and I was like, hi, those are actually my socks. I think you took them out of the line. And she turned and she was like, this is my name. She said, now the name. Taya Nyambura is my name. Then she turns to her friend. What's my name? The friend says, Taya Nyambura. I was like, hold up. This is the ghetto. Like, I'm being mugged. I don't know what to do. And then we would have, like, I remember there was a time that I used to have this expression. It was like a consistent frown. Honestly, my face was just made like that. Now I don't have it because I've really smiled a lot until I've broken that frown. But I used to have this like scowl, like, I don't know, just looked like I was being rude. So once this teacher tapped me on the shoulder and I turned and my face was just the scowl, the usual scowl, okay? And the head girl was like, I saw you scowling at the teacher. And I was like, girl, like, what's up? Like, first of all, you don't have better work to do. You're busy pinpointing who is sneering at the chair, who's not sneering at the chair. There are people who are doing real crimes, stealing socks. Address that. So she took me in front of the whole parade and made me kneel, saying that I'm so disrespectful to teachers. She saw me sneering at the teacher. And I was like, I just have a permanent scowl. Like, there's not much I can do about it, you know? Like, my lips, they're heavy for the face, and so they droop towards the end. So I didn't get why she was making such a big fuss. Somebody has stolen my socks. Other people's snacks have been stolen in our small cubicle. Like, there are real matters happening here, and she's busy bringing me out as a, you know, big bad girl for scowling. And so she made a real example of me for the form ones, like, don't be this girl. And so I was kind of just like, okay, like, this is just not working for me. So my previous primary school, there was not much bullying. Like, I don't think there was bullying. I mean, being number last is always like, haha. But, like, nobody was going to bully you like that. Like, nobody would make you kneel or do excessive things. Like, we just play. Maybe the most bullying is, why are you sitting on the swing longer? Those are the bullies. But now, people are just picking on you. It was really weird. So I remember that. And I remember I went for midterm. And I had become so thin because the food, honestly, those gideris were not gidering. They were just not right. It is not good to feed your kids like that. So I remember I'd lost so much weight. And when I entered the door, my dad saw me and asked me, am I sick? And I told him, I'm not going back to that school. I left all my things in that school. Like, you know, midterm, you don't come back with your, I don't know, duvets. They make you buy a whole house. It's like you're moving out. Your buckets, duvets, hanging lines, you have everything. So I left all those things, my uniforms that were there. I had only just my school bag. I just said, I'm not going back to that school because I've had enough. And I had actually in the school, one of my classmates from primary was also in my school and we were best buds. And nobody could understand us. They used to say, like, how we talk, haieleweki, like, we don't make sense when we are talking to one another. And she left the school after 2 weeks. So now I was alone. So this midterm, I was like, I'm going to make my move. So yeah, so that's how I eventually left that school. I just said, I'm not going back. And my dad convinced my mom. And that was that. Transitioning from the boarding school to this other high school. The other high school was a day school. It was actually my primary school. They just had a high school now that was a day school. So I didn't even do those CG exams, interviews. Why are you interviewing people to take them to school? They're asking to come to a school, you're interviewing them. I don't get it, but I didn't do any of these interviews since I was in primary there. I just went to the high school, which was day. Oh my gosh, relief. Like, exhale, because I was used to the environment, so it was quite easy. And then when I went there, I found, like, most of my primary classmates. I was like, oh, also you guys couldn't manage. And later on, my friend who left came also to that school. So how she went to 3 schools. She went to another boarding. It didn't work. She came now all the way to, and she had to go a class behind me. Yeah, so it was very interesting. So I found a lot of people there from my primary school. I was like, ah, nice, nice. This makes sense. It's looking, and it was day. So you go home, which I think, let your kids go home. Don't lock up a bunch of teenagers with raging hormones. It's not right. if you ask me, it's not right. Don't do that. It's just, they're not caged animals, wild animals caged. And then, like, guys ban schools because I think it's just the hormones. They need some relief. They need home, some good food, some sleep. Yeah, so it was not bad. It was okay now. Now I could just, I was now there in the other school, I was doing well. Now here I was doing, like, super well because now, like, the social side had kind of straightened out. Thereafter, I just, you know, basically would pass. I would excel in school a lot. And I remember one of the things that would happen is I would ask my mom to buy me, like, textbooks. Like, for my birthday, I'd be like, oh, there's KCSE Made Familiar. There's this kind of book, this. Can you buy it for me? And so my mom would just buy me all the textbooks. So I was a deep geek. At this rate, I'm like, I knew everything about everything. I knew that the sting of a wasp is alkaline, not acidic. I was that girl correcting the teacher. Oh, you know. So I was that girl and I would excel. I enjoyed it. But now there was like a social switch because now excelling in high school isn't cool. Now guys are like, yeah, you're geeky. Loosen up. Like, let's go have fun. You know, and I'm like, you guys keep changing the goalposts. When I'm finally passing, you're now saying it's not cool. In primary, it was the thing. Now, in high school, at number one, guys are like, listen up, let's go to junction. Like, why are you passing? And you did the homework. Like, so I'm like, what's going on here? Like, this is a game that you can't win at. But, like, I'd already gone there and I still held the belief that, you know, if you succeed in school, you're gonna really pass and excel in life. And those are the narratives all the teachers would give us. If they're now high school, like, since we're in a bit of a chill school, we still had teachers, you know, telling the D students, like, manze, you'll not amount to anything in life. We had those teachers. You'll not amount to anything in life. You don't even make an effort. Who will hire you? Who will employ you? Just look at yourself. Like, you know, so we still had that. So there was still that narrative that if you're a D student, you'll not amount to anything in life. So you better be an A student because the A student is going to enter. They're going to be a doctor. They're going to excel. You know, the whole world is open to them. They can do absolutely any career and they can excel. At this point, career-wise, I had some ideas. I wanted to be an architect at some point. I wanted to do something with maths because I was really doing well in the maths and in physics. So I was like, oh, maybe I could do something in this, you know, field. So that's what I was thinking about, but I wasn't still, like, set. I still kind of didn't know what that would look like, but I just knew, like, if I pass, it's gonna work out. So I didn't spend much time musing over, I want to be this or I want to be that. I was just like, be present. Let's get this A down. And then when we get this A down, then we can think later. Yeah, so that was career. Socially, I remember my friend had a boyfriend. And I was like, should I get into this? Should I get a boyfriend, you know? But I was like, no, let's study. Let's study. And, you know, but my friend had a boyfriend. And, like, guys now had, like, relationships. But me, I said, put your head down. Study. Read. No, Mr. Hikimea at your fingertips. So that's what I was doing. So that socially, I was just like, I'm not going to do this boyfriend thing. Like, I don't even have crushes. Like, I don't have feelings, okay? I just know school. And I actually ended up still getting an A. And by the way, my friend who had a boyfriend also got an A. So I was just like, okay, maybe I should have just had a boyfriend after all because she managed an A, okay? So I got all A's. I think I got an A of 82, if I'm not wrong, or something like that. Like, at that time, they had abolished ranking. They had removed that, you have an A of 87 point, whatever. They just say A is 12 points. They had already removed those ranking. I think they, you know how high school competition is really deep in Kenya? Like, it's a whole news, a news thing. So there was no at A of 87.5 or 85 point. It was just the highest A in the whole country was 84. And 84 meant A is equals to 12. So 12 times 8 is that 84. So I think I had an A minus somewhere. So I had like 82. That there was no, they had removed that thing. I think high schools and people are cheating and it was getting like out of hand. So yeah, so I got an A. I was, of course, excited. I was like, oh my gosh. Unfortunately, I was not featured anywhere, but like, I was like, yes, yes, what I've been waiting for all my life has happened. You know, it was like, oh man, thank goodness. Although I had wanted an A of 84, and I low-key felt like, I don't know who gave me an A minus in computer, because I was really a star in computer, but I got like I think an A minus there or something like that. And so, of course, like we had the celebration in school, so like guys came, we celebrated, we have A's, yay, our lives are set. And actually the student I remember who used to get D's, he didn't even fail. I think he got like a C. And so we were all like generally happy as a class, but the class was really close knit, so we really loved one another, so we were really happy, like everybody had passed, you know, as best as they could. And like, I was ready for the next chapter. And we had applied through KUCCPS for like courses. I did not remember what I had applied in KUCCPS. I didn't ask anybody. I think I just put my own things there. And so I had, that now was now coming to mind. By the way, what did I couldn't remember until I was called for economics and statistics at the University of Nairobi. But me, I had other ideas. I was like, I'm going to go abroad. Okay, I'm going abroad because this A, it just means abroad. So I started now doing my SATs. I don't even know what SATs stand for. I just know that they are like the exam that is done in US before they go to university. So if you get like a score of like 1800 and above, I think it's out of 2400. And it's only three subjects. Remember my primary, my first school where we used to do only maths, English, and Kiswahili? But there it's maths, English, and I think science. I think there are only three subjects. I think they're all 600 each or something like that. So, or there are four, one of the two. So that's now was coming back to mind. Like, oh, okay, so there are only three subjects. Or there are four, three or four. It's gonna be easy. Like, I don't have to do like so many things, right? So I started like preparing for them, and I did my first one, and we paid like 20k, and that was a lot. I mean, 20k for exam, I think it was 20k or more. And when I did the exam, I failed, and I was like, oh my gosh, please God, no. I think I got like a 1600, and the schools I had applied for, only Ivy Leagues, Harvard, I don't know, MIT, Vanderbilt University, Pennsylvania State, Kenny, the cream of the cream. Because I was like, after I fought in this Kenyan system, I should be able to go to Harvard or something. So I had made all those applications, written huge, very different from what I had imagined. So they ask you to write a personal statement, which is about your story. And I was reading, like, I'd check on YouTube and see people's personal statements. And it was such a different world, because somebody wrote a personal statement about spiders, like different kind of spiders, the species, their favorite spider, why it's their favorite spider, how it correlates to their life. And I was like, this is way too complex. Us guys just write basic stories in school. This guy is written literature, real literature. I understand why he's in Harvard. Like, I understand, even me. And what I was writing for my personal statement was giving ABCD, basic. I'm an African in the African state. And it was just basic. Like, now I started seeing that there was such a difference in worlds academically. So these people are so, they're into their hobbies. They're so excellent in the way they pursue what they love, and they have like some sense of purpose. But for me, I realized like I actually don't like anything. I actually don't have any hobby. I didn't play any sport. I have nothing to talk about. So then I saw like, oh my gosh, we're robbing, you know, students and people of this, of developing that part of their mind that loves something and cleaves to it and cultures it from a from a young age. So I couldn't write about music. I didn't know anything about anything. I knew a bit of everything, but too little for myself to be like an expert and to compete with these Harvard whatever. And so I received my rejections. I remember there's a common application. So you apply it on a website called Common Application. And the maximum number of applications you can have, I think, is 21. Of all my 21, all of them were rejections. So I got 21 rejections and I was like, whoa. So I was like, cool, this is a learning curve. And I needed now, I had so much work to do because I didn't know what I was passionate about and I couldn't convince them that I'm passionate enough. Number one, I'm passionate about something. Number two, give me a scholarship. So because the ranking, the merit I needed, the expertise I needed, I just did not have. So I was basically what we are being taught is to be a jack of all trades. You know, be good at all subjects, but not good enough. You can't compete internationally. So I was like, wow. So I put my head down. I relaxed kidogo. I started trying to dig into what I love. Now, I remembered that I had applied for economics and statistics at University of Nairobi. Unbeknownst to me, because I did not know that. I think I just saw it and was like, oh, looks cute. You know. So I started going to University of Nairobi still as I pursue this other one. So I decided to do another exam, which was called the ACT. Now, you can do SATs or ACT. It's like the same, but not the same exactly. So I thought the ACT would be easier, number one. And I was like, okay, let me just try this and then give another go at this dream of going abroad. So now I was super determined. I had convinced my mom. I'd convinced my dad, everybody. And so much so that two of my sisters who had gone ahead of me started applying. And they also applied, they did, I think, their SATs and their ACTs. So we were now doing it together and we were discussing. And so I wrote again my personal statement. I tried to make it as full of depth. I tried to dig into those sides of me that are necessary to move an audience so that I can get into these schools. So I did my best. I sent my personal statement to one of my older sisters and she was like, okay, this statement, it's much better than the other statement that you did. You know, she gave me some of her advice, tweak here, tweak there. So I think I had it down. So I did my ACT, failed again. I was like, oh my God. So my sisters who had gone ahead of me, they also did. They passed and they got into those schools and they went to America. I was like, hold up. I started this thing by myself. You all have seen it's good, you have done it, and you've gone. You've left me here. So when they were leaving, they're like, don't worry, you'll also go. I didn't ever go. After the ACT, I don't know, I just kind of just let it go. I was just like, I'm literally exhausted. Like, I've done IELTS exams, I've done ACT exams, I've revised. I just can't find that side of me that is, you know, deep. And I don't know how to manufacture depth. I can't seem to be able to move these people who recruit students and get a scholarship. So I think I managed to get one, but they required school fees. And the school fees was like so much. So I was like, hey. I said, okay, fine. So I was like in like a season of like depression. So I'd go to University of Nairobi. I'd go in my pajamas. Like I didn't care. I wasn't even trying. I just do the exams, somehow excel still, because, you know, it's basically just explaining yourself on those papers. So, but in second day, I broke my ankle, so I didn't go to school for such a long time because, like, I couldn't walk. So thereafter, I realized that actually I'm in University of Nairobi to stay because, like, yeah. Because after that, I think I also started trying to go to UK because now why I liked UK is that UK could take KCSE. And I mean, I'd worked for this KCSE all my life. So like, let them take the KCSE. It's okay. So then I was like, okay, let's try UK. And so I did UK. They didn't take me on scholarship because I still could not demonstrate that I am this super merited student. And I was still saying the same shallow things. I just have a dream. I'm determined. I'm persistent. And I'm disciplined. And they want to hear something like spiders. They want to be like, I love spiders. I love humanitarian work. You know, they want to hear things like that. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know these things. So I got there, still school fees. My dad was like, "Hey, you know the only way you're going to get scholarship. Oh, you know, this one, there are millions to send one student to school." And I still had like siblings behind me still. So then I just, you know, let it go. And I started becoming a Syrian student in third year. So the whole of first year and second year, I had not made any friends. I would just go to school, go home, go to school, go home. I think I was like in this, because I had so locked in to going abroad, I missed everything that was around me. So the people who wanted to be my friends in first year are like, "Ish, look at this girl. Even she can't talk to anybody. She can't tell anybody hi." But I was so, I don't know, I was so lost in going abroad. I was so determined and I couldn't figure it out and I didn't understand like go about it, how to be deep, how to find my hobby, my passion, my life's work. You know, I didn't know like where people get these things, and I'm not a good liar, so I couldn't lie a story like I'm passionate about squirrels. I couldn't do. So then I realized I'm going to stay here in University of Nairobi, and I decided maybe it's more credible for me to do my master's abroad. So I'd already decided I'm doing master's. Still at this time, I'm not set on which career I'm taking. I'm still all deep in, I want to just be in school, I just want to excel, and I know if I can excel here. Yeah. So I became serious in economics class about third year. Second year, I remember I had broken my ankle, so like one semester I was just like hanging about, I was relaxing. I still did the exams. I think I flopped most of the exams because I didn't attend any of the classes. But I did the exams. Some I passed. I think some ones that I needed to be in class, I did not pass. But I was like, it's okay. So I did third year, all A's. Fourth year, all A's. Made some friends. And now these friends I was making were like, "By the way, did you ignore me in first year?" I was like, "Hi, I didn't see your face. Like, I didn't see anybody." I was so somewhere else. I was not existing in my present. So I was like, "Oh, you tried to be my friend." They narrate stories of how I ignored them. I'm like, "I promise you, my head, where I was just not seeing you." So I made some friends. We'd revise together and then, you know, we'd pass and, you know, it was fun. I was like, "Okay, it's not too bad. It's not too bad." And then, of course, at the time I was graduating, it was like COVID time. So there was no graduation. There was no graduation. I was like, "Eh." And I had hoped to get a first class, but I got a second upper. And I was like, "No way. No way. I need a first class to get a scholarship to go abroad." So I'm back in my abroad. You can see where my head is at. Hey, man, say someone could have helped me then. So my head is still, you know, going abroad. And I've not gotten a first class. So I called the school, Department of Economics. And I remember the guy, he's called David. I was like, "David, I didn't get a first class. Fungua your transcript. Hazishi. I mean, nikulikuwa na simoja tu. Na, ewe." So I asked him what he said. So he opens my thing and he's like, "You missed it by just a couple of points." And I'm like, "Sileke so points. Like, what's up? What is happening to me now? Oh my gosh." So he told me, "Yeah, you missed it a couple of points, but you are quite close." And I was like, "Oh my God, this is not happening to me now." So I didn't get the first class. And as you can expect, the scholarship that I was applying to at the time, because after I finished, I knew in my heart, in first class. So at that time, I had already started my applications because you needed a reference letter from your lecturers. I'd identified two lecturers who were nice to me. And I was like, "Okay, these nice ones, they can give," because you know, University of Nairobi has crazy lecturers. So if you find the nice ones, just pinpoint them early. So yeah, so then they had sent me their reference letters and I was already curating this application and I was ready. Now I was ready to go to Scotland. And I was like, you know, come on, their accents are hilarious. You know, who doesn't want to laugh all the time? So then I had applied and now I fell short because one of the criteria was have a first class, hold a 1.1. That's first class honors. And I'm like, bummer, I don't have that. I put my application in anyway. I thought, you know, maybe, and I'd written another personal statement. This one was slightly more spicy. Again, my social life, still dead. I couldn't see anybody. I had no boyfriend. Like, I was just like, I don't know where I was. People are partying. People are living life. No, see, I just, you know, still in school. I still held on to this belief that, you know, if we can excel, trust me, this is going to help my romantic relationships, okay? This excelling in school or whatever is going to help my, I'm going to be a great parent because of this. And I'm going to be a millionaire because I just put my head down and I studied real good.
Catch more African stories in the next episode of Legally Clueless.
What a powerful story. And that's only part one. Part two is going to be out next week. But already, Tanya had me thinking about something so many of us carry without even realizing it, right? Because it's not only that we were taught that education is important. We were taught that our worth is tied to our performance. So if we succeeded academically, we're going to succeed everywhere else. As a spouse, as a parent. And if we struggle academically, then the failure becomes not a failure in academics. It's a failure at life itself. I mean, I still remember our previous president, Uhuru Kenyatta, during his first term, I believe, because I remember I was on traditional radio at the time, and we were having cases of like high school students just even becoming suicidal in the lead up to the exams. And he gave an address where he talks about how in the grander scheme of life, exams are not that important. And I remember that part of his speech was kind of drowned out. But for me, I was like, that's the most important part, because it undoes this lie and pressure we put on kids. All of us can say we went through it, right? Where it's such a pressure to perform well academically, not for the academics' sake, but because if we don't, then it means we are a failure all around. Like listening to Tanya describe what it felt to be number last, and then like just the effort it took to be one of the top students, you can hear how deeply those messages become part of who we believe we are. But personally, I've always thought life is so much bigger than a report card. I was talking to a cousin of mine who is abroad. He's in uni, and he was telling me about his exams and how difficult it is, etc. And I told him, just remember, this doesn't define who you are. If you don't perform well in these exams, it's not a waste of money. You're not a failure. It's not a waste of time. No. You just didn't perform well in exam A, in English, in French, whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah, your sense of worth was never supposed to depend on grades. Never. Anyway, next week in part two, Tanya steps into adulthood. Oof. And that's where everything she's ever believed about success really begins to, what's the word, to unravel, right? So trust me, you don't want to miss it. Make sure you subscribe wherever you're listening to this on so that you don't miss out on part two. And if while listening, you have been inspired to share your story, you are African, you've got a story, we want to hear it. In the show notes, you will find our storyteller form, fill it out, and one of our correspondents is going to get back to you. Whew. I've got such good energy, and I hope it translates and it comes to you in this episode. I've got good energy around me, and I just want to, I'm like pointing at my microphone right now so that the energy goes to you. But thank you so much for listening to this episode to the very, very end. I truly appreciate you, and I believe that you have every single thing it takes to heal. That's it for this episode of Legally Clueless. You can share this podcast with your friends. You can keep it for yourself. I'm not judging. Just make sure you're here next week for the next episode.